So now we know why Antiochus Epiphanes is called a despicable person in Scripture. Join me today as we go into more depth, beginning with Daniel 11, verse 31. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to another episode of Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative, biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Well, thanks so much again for joining me. You're listening to Dr. Fred, another episode of Study, Grow, Know. And if you've been following along, you know that we've been dealing with the prophecies of Daniel chapter 11. This actually is part 11 that we're discussing and going over today. I would encourage you, if you have not listened to the beginning episodes, that you go back and find number one and start from there. You can also read about these articles on my blog, which is studygrowknowblog.com. And we've got a few more episodes, installments of this to go, but again, you're with me on part 11. And last time we finally got to the point of learning why the Bible calls Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth a despicable person. And the Bible does so in Daniel 11, verse 21. It doesn't call him that by name, but when we take secular history and lay it alongside of Scripture, it's interesting to find out that that's who that individual is. We begin to understand just how evil that man was because of how corrupt his nature was, how totally dedicated to his own selfish interests and pursuits he was. And he was corrupt in all ways, especially towards God's people and the nation of Israel itself. Now, Antiochus had no compunction, no problem killing a high priest. And he accepted bribes from men who wanted to be high priest. He had no problem in doing that. He had no problem in killing a high priest. He had no problem in killing thousands of Jews. And he had no problem in desecrating the most holy of all places inside the Jewish temple. And he did all these things in anger. This is what is revealed to us in the latter portion of Daniel chapter 11, and we covered some of that in our previous installment, part 10. Now let's pick it up with Daniel 11, verse 31, is what we introduced at the end of our last installment, and also the article, if you've been keeping up by reading them. Here's Daniel 11, 31, quote, "Forces from him will arise, desecrate the sanctuary fortress, and do away with the regular sacrifice, and they will set up the abomination of desolation," unquote. Now that's very interesting. The first part of the above verse is very interesting because in essence, Antiochus Epiphanes the Fourth, he sends military troops into Jerusalem, and according to history, this was initially supposed to be a peaceful mission, but it turned out to be anything but peaceful. Antiochus ordered his general, this is according to secular history, Apollonius, and a contingent of 22,000 soldiers into Jerusalem on what he claimed was a peaceful mission. However, when they were inside the city, they attacked the Jews on the Sabbath, when the Jews were reluctant to exert themselves. Apollonius killed many Jews, took many Jewish women and children captive as slaves, plundered the temple, and burned the city. That's according to Dr. Thomas Constable. Why did Antiochus do this? Well, it's interesting that the same reason runs throughout history from one evil dictator to another. It really doesn't matter who the individual is. Antiochus's reason was that it had its roots in the same reason Hitler used. It was to exterminate Jews. But more importantly, while he wanted to wipe Judaism off the map and replace it with Hellenistic culture, that's not necessarily what Hitler did or wanted to do. He just wanted to get rid of the Jews, wanted to exterminate them in his final solution. Antiochus wanted to eradicate Judaism, replacing it with the Hellenistic culture he had been born under and grew up under and knew of because of Alexander the Great. His whole goal was to return Syria and that whole area to the same type of empire that Alexander made famous. Hitler didn't necessarily want to do that. He did work with representatives of Islam, and he gained their promise of help in eradicating Jews from the Middle East. And the main goal, as I mentioned, in his final solution was to simply eradicate all Jews. Now, I'm sure Hitler had his reasons that he believed were at the root of his so-called mission, but in reality, he was prompted by the same spirit that will completely and indwell and fill the coming Antichrist. And it was the same spirit who compelled Antiochus. It will be Satan himself, who has always, according to Scripture, hated the Jews, Judaism, and Israel. For a beautiful synopsis of this, just read one chapter, Revelation 12. And it's a bird's eye view. It's a synopsis of the beginning to the end. It's fascinating. Now, I believe that Satan believes that if he can successfully destroy all Jews, then there will be no Jew alive that God can call his final remnant, and who would then go into the millennial kingdom and enjoy the fullness of the promised land, something the Israelites have never done. I believe it has been to that end that Satan has worked and continues to work, and his goal is the complete annihilation of Jews. And if he can't destroy all of them, then at least he can work to turn them against Orthodox Jews. And he's been very able at doing that. He's done very well at that. Antiochus attacked Jews in Jerusalem and desecrated their temple. Constable notes that Antiochus, quote, prohibited the Jews from following the Mosaic law. He did away with the Jewish sacrifices, festivals, and circumcision. That's according to 1 Maccabees 1, 54 through 44. And he was also in love with the Grecian culture, as I mentioned. And that's interesting because remember, the various kings of the north tried and failed to reestablish the grandeur of Alexander the Great's empire after he unexpectedly died. This was certainly part of Antiochus Epiphanes IV's plan. And to that end, he wanted to continue to push Grecian culture into areas that did not have it, thereby overthrowing the previous culture. And Antiochus likely honestly believed that by replacing Judaism and the Mosaic law with Hellenistic culture, the Jews eventually would go along with it, and they would forget all about Moses, the law, Judaism, and the God of Israel. They would ultimately adopt the pagan rites and rituals of Greek culture, including the gods of that culture. Now, this is one of the reasons why I believe Antiochus placed the statue of Zeus inside the Holy of Holies of the Jewish temple. There were actually a number of reasons he did this. But I think one of them was intended to highlight the fact that Zeus was greater than Israel's God, because Zeus was now inside the holy place and Israel's God had done nothing about it. The implication, as far as Antiochus was concerned, was very clear, because Zeus was Antiochus's specific personal deity. That according to 2 Maccabees 6:2. Now, according to Dr. Constable, we learn even more about Antiochus' desecration and demands. I wonder if you knew this. He tells us this happened on December 16th, 168 BC. The Jews referred to this act as the abomination that caused desolation, since it polluted their altar and made sacrifices to Yahweh on it impossible. Now, if that's the case, then obviously the sacrificial system would have to stop, at least temporarily. Antiochus further ordered his Jewish subjects, get this, to celebrate his subsequent birthdays by offering a pig to Zeus on the altar inside the area of the Jewish temple. Unquote. Now, is it any wonder that the angelic messenger who first revealed new information to Daniel referred to Antiochus as a despicable or detestable person? It seems clear enough that Antiochus had his own special pact with the devil. Now, in the Gospels, Jesus himself refers to this event and states that another like it would occur toward the end of this current age, prior to his second coming, Matthew 24:15, Mark 13:14. Jesus calls this event the abomination of desolation, and specifically refers to the book of Daniel as he does so. And by the way, it's a good thing to point out at this juncture that if Jesus viewed the book of Daniel as being authentic, Remember he said, according to the book of Daniel, remember he said that? He was actually stating that he believed the original Daniel, the authentic Daniel, was the actual author of the book of Daniel. If that's the case, then I don't think we need any further proof of anybody else, do we? We can ignore the higher critics. Now, many students of the Bible today point to the Roman attack on Jerusalem in A.D. 70, which happened under Titus, and they point to that and they say, well, that's fulfillment of Jesus' words right there. The problem is that nowhere is there any historical evidence that Titus did to the Jews what Antiochus did to the Jews in 168 B.C. There is no record or evidence that Titus slaughtered anything on the altar or that he set up any deity inside the Holy of Holies, including himself. In fact, records do support the fact that it was very likely Jewish priests who were the ones that actually set fire to the temple so that it could not be desecrated by the Romans. The Romans removed every stone of the temple and melted out the gold overlay, just as Jesus predicted they would in Matthew 24:2, Mark 13:2, and Luke 21:6. But they did not desecrate the temple itself. It had already been burned to the ground. Anything that could burn would burn it. Now, as another historian rightly notes, the book of Revelation, which dates after the destruction of Jerusalem, about 95 AD, predicts the coming of a beast who will behave as Antiochus did, only on a much larger scale. Revelation 13. I find all this fascinating, and I hope you do too. Jesus, Paul, and John essentially allude to Antiochus Epiphanes IV being a type of Antichrist, with the final man of sin or man of lawlessness in 2 Thessalonians 2 being the very embodiment of evil personified. We're going to continue with Daniel 11:32 next time, because Daniel 11 is not done with Antiochus Epiphanes IV yet. So I hope you'll join me then. And in the meantime, until we meet again, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how blessed you are in Him.
You've been listening to Study, Grow, Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.